change the speed of that too, and it picks up beautifully, so I'll just leave it right there. Let me begin initially. Should I just direct the questions to both of you? Is that the best way to do it, or direct them to you, or?
Yeah, I think direct it to both of us, but probably I've been working very closely with the political minister, so probably I start the giving you the answers, but
okay.
If I think there is something missing, I can.
Yeah, we probably need to some questions.
Fine. Why don't we begin, actually, for the record, and it would be useful to me too, if you could describe the work of your office in general. That is, what interests you see yourself representing, and if you could just give me some background, it would be very useful for me in my own writing.
Yeah. You have contacted us as the secretary of SAFO, the Swedish Atomic Forum, which is a very small organization. Okay, it has about 30 members from the industry, both the producing, power producing industry, and the industry producing equipment for nuclear power stations. We normally we have no full-time secretary. I'm my main work is as within the OKG company, where I'm responsible for information and public affairs, and I spend say 15% of my time for the SAFO organization. And before me, Sten was Secretary General, and he had also other
work. You know, I was head of information of the Studsvik company, you know, the research center.
Yes, I've heard of it, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I had this SAFO business. It's a part-time job, about 15%, just as a career.
Okay.
So, and we don't, SAFO don't work very much within Sweden. We have no information campaign about nuclear power in Sweden at all. We have a small paper which is circulated in 1,000 copies about in Swedish, but that's mostly news about nuclear power in other countries. And then we also produce the yellow papers you have read, which is a paper in English 3 or 4 times a year, where we write about nuclear power in Sweden. And as rather general or neutral information, and also as a type of marketing of knowledge and equipment from the Swedish industry to other countries.
Okay, that's good background for me. Particularly, I was unaware that most of your time is spent elsewhere.
Yeah.
Okay, that's very very useful for me to know.
It's not so in most other countries in Europe. I mean, in the United States, you have the large atomic industrial forum. I don't know how many they are, but they have a big
number. Many.
Yeah. And I think, for instance, in Germany, in Great Britain, France, Spain,
Switzerland.
Italy, Switzerland, they have full-time members. But they, I think all of them, they also perform work within their countries, which we do not very much. And, but But of course the same type of work is performed in Sweden, but not by the Swedish Atomic Forum, but by the different companies.
The member companies, yeah.
The utilities and Asea-Atom.
Let me ask a question that begins before Chernobyl, which is, could you describe to me what your view, or perhaps the view of industrialists, or the view of your colleagues was, or if you can generalize, and if not, just your own views, concerning the notion that Sweden, abracadabra, in 2010, and this is before Chernobyl, was going to phase out nuclear power, which today I think is approximately 50% of its generation of electricity in this country. Is that correct about...
From now on, it's 50%,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. What your own view was of this, of the fact, of the victory of Line 2, first of all, but I'd just be interested, it would give me a good baseline also, that is... When you sit in your office and you think about nuclear power and the efficiency of your industry and everything, and all of a sudden you're out there exporting and the whole, all your colleagues are looking at you representing Sweden, which in 2010, by referendum, which is not binding legally, that was going to outlaw nuclear power.
Yeah.
How do you view that? I mean, what do you?
Yeah.
What's your view?
Yes, as you say, the referendum in Sweden 1980, it's not binding legally, but there was a decision in the parliament a couple of months after, so and all the parties agreed to that decision, and it's not the referendum but the decision in the parliament which is the base for the political views for the energy policy from 1980 and 1999. And I mean, we have from the industry, we have indicated several times that we didn't like the referendum because we thought it was clear that nuclear power was a good energy source and could be trusted on, and that we had a very safe system in Sweden. My own view has been the whole time that I think it was a good idea to have that referendum, but I don't think that view is normally in the industry. I can give you one example for why I think like this. We can now see the and have seen for several years the nuclear battlefields. In Germany, for instance, around the nuclear power stations and other sites, there is a very, very hard campaign, both from the industry and from the interveners, in a way which is almost unthinkable in Sweden, and we have nothing on that. But I was down at the Barsebäck plant. Barsebäck March last Saturday, and saw the 5,000 demonstrators there, which was for a German and a very, very soft march. And I think that
now, why were you at Barsebäck? Were you there as an observer? Or?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Not.
I know you didn't speak. Yeah.
No, I was not in the march. I was.
Right. No, I know. I didn't anticipate you would be in the march. I had stopped at Barsebäck, you know, on my way up from Copenhagen.
Yes.
And Barsebäck is one of the questions I eventually wanted to get to because it's the one that I think in this country, all the parties are looking to. Well, hopefully that the Social Democrats will use as the example of a commitment to to close it down. It's almost unprecedented that the Danish government would put such pressure on this country to close down a nuclear power plant. And my first interview was with the Green Party way back 10 days ago, and they had all their buttons and all their information on the march, and they were telling me they were gearing up for it. And so I interrupted you, but but I'm glad you were there, and I'm glad you were
It was not a very big march. They were greatly disappointed. They thought 15,000 and 4,000 to 5,000 came. I mean, that type of march is especially in Sweden. They are quite different in most other countries in Europe, Switzerland, Germany,
Austria.
They are much more violent. And I think the main reason for this is that nuclear power was brought up as a party political issue very, very early, already in 1975. or 76 at least, before the general election in 1976. And meant that was not so much over pressure in the issue. The center party was some sort of relief valve for that type of pressure, and I think that's a good thing. Nuclear power was a party issue much, much later in all other countries except Sweden. The only exception I can think of is Austria, 1977. But in all other European countries, it was just 1 or 2 years ago. It was brought up as a party issue.
Are there restrictions now on the exporting of Swedish equipment or nuclear reactors to other countries? Do you have to get special permits now?
Yeah, we have to get the permit from the government, yes.
I've heard from friends of mine in Stockholm University and others who when they go to Korea or other places, it's remarkable how many people they will run into or meet from Sweden who are representing Swedish technology and the fact that overseas it's viewed as the leader in many respects, yet it's almost impossible to sell that equipment to get that. Is that accurate then?
It's quite clear that the government, they have said before the Chernobyl accident, it was quite clear, it was said in the parliament as well, that Asea-Atom would be free to sell the nuclear power stations to other countries.
Also, I think also after the Chernobyl, I read about some permission to export to India.
That's very special equipment. High pressure type of equipment which ASEA developed for industrial diamonds, which also could be used apparently for weapons. Weapon factory or some sort. It's not very obvious how the government would react today if ASEA came and asked for the permission to export the nuclear power stations to Holland, Finland, or South Korea.
Yeah.
I guess that the Seattle, they know the answer, but there is no official answer, and I don't know the answer. But it's quite clear, for instance, that the people from the government they helped Asiatom in contacts in Finland, for instance, and in Holland, before the Chernobyl accident. How it was in South Korea, I don't know. I don't think there was any official contacts, but it was quite clearly that the Asiatom company, that they knew that they would have the permission.
So then Chernobyl happens, and I've heard a lot of, since I've been here, and I'd like to hear from you whether you think this is fair or not. Since I've been here, I've heard a lot of criticism made that at Forsmark, which obviously was the nuclear power plant where they discovered the fact that the Soviets had had an accident, that there was terrible confusion for several hours, that they didn't even know, this is what I've heard from my previous, that it was that they thought it was their own, first of all. And this represented to critics the fact that, my gosh, that even though they detected radiation, they thought it was their own radiation, and that therefore detection wasn't nearly as good as people would suggest, that there was confusion several hours afterwards. People who had gone up there and interviewed people were bewildered at the lack of knowledge by the technicians as to where the accident had occurred. Is that fair? Because I don't know. And
I was there.
You were there.
Arriving at 2 o'clock.
You went there specifically?
Oh, this week. Yes, before they knew. I went away from my office about 11 o'clock before they knew the reason for the radioactivity.
Okay.
They detected the radioactivity when their people went out from the station. They have a monitor, and they detected the activity on their shoes. And that was the first alarm. They couldn't understand anything at all. And then they, after a while, 1 or 2 hours later, they started the measurements outside the building because they couldn't see anything at all inside. And then they saw a lot of radioactivity on the ground at different times. And they went away and they did not understand anything at all because the stack monitor gave the normal value, and no incidents or accidents were detected in any of the control rooms. Three reactors were running at the time. And they saw some odd reason which I have not seen any explanation for later on, but they thought they saw an increase the closer you of the radioactivity level, the closer you were to the plant. So they could not exclude the possibility that it, of some odd reason, it was coming from their own station. And that amount of radioactivity coming from quite another source, from other parts of the world, was during the early hours, and probably an unthinkable thought. So before they were quite, of course, the suspicion started rather early, but they were not sure. And the way to react on a nuclear station in such a case is that's what we have in our minds always. You have to be conservative in all your thinking. You must behave according to the worst case you can think of. And the worst case was until they had some other indication. The worst case was that something, in a peculiar way, was coming from my own station.
Okay. So then, therefore, you think the critics have been unfair?
In that aspect, it's totally unfair. That's my point of opinion.
Yeah.
They also they did not shut down the reactors, but they decided, what was it, between 10 and 11 o'clock in the morning, to evacuate all unnecessary people, which were not involved in measurements and not involved in the running of the three reactors. And there have been some critic about the way the evacuation was performed. In some respect, that critic can be right. That I think is incorrect. But I think it's the only way to react when you're working in this field. Until you're quite sure about something else, you have to work according to the rule think of the worst possible.
What was the criticism of the evacuation? I haven't.
Everybody took their own car.
Okay.
And one man in each car.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And there was they were delayed very much for that reason. So the evacuation took longer time.
Now the cars themselves could have been radioactive too, is that correct?
No, not inside.
Oh, it was inside,
no.
Okay.
But taking your, if everybody's leaving in their own car, and almost everybody's coming to the site in their own car, but that they should have, in a real situation, they should have put in 5-6 persons in every car and driven away as soon as possible.
Okay. So Chernobyl happens, and we get this alarm at Forsmark, and then we have this sorting out period. And of course, the Swedish people find out first. They know, of course, that there's been some sort of action or detection. They don't know yet it's come from Chernobyl. Then after this period, the world finds out, thanks to the Swedes, that it did come from Chernobyl. Then the first really explanations that the Swedish people get are from that at that time very few people knew who he was, but has now become a point man in many respects. Gunnar Bengtsson, the Karolinska Institute for Radiation Protection, and this group in particular, scientists, physicists also, have come under again. I'd like to ask you if you think this would be is fair. Apparently, in my 2 weeks of discussion from Copenhagen to here, and have come under just remarkable amounts of criticism from the Swedish general population. I was in Malmo in a hotel restaurant, and there was a bar, and the television was on. And he came on, and 4 or 5 people went, "Not him again." That kind of thing, and of course. Being on business, I inquired about why, and fortunately the person spoke English, and he said, for the last 3 weeks he changes his story every day. I knew I was going to be seeing him, and actually I spent 3 very good hours with Bengtsson, and he was very frank, and he explained to me what he thought was some of the problems that had happened public relations-wise. But do you think I'm interested in how the Swedish people perceive all of this, and do you think that the credibility issue has been hurt by the way the Karolinska Institute handled it, or, first of all, are you satisfied with the way they tried to explain the effects of radiation on people, average citizens in Sweden, for example? Could you pick your blueberries in your archipelago, or could you go up to Umeå and pick blueberries, and much less eat reindeer and other things?
I quite clear on one point, and that is that was a very early decision within the Radiation Institute, probably in contact with the department, I don't know, but probably, that they would be completely free to give out all the information they had to the press and to the public. And as you probably know, that's an old Swedish tradition within the bureaucracy. Yeah, I mean, every paper I send to an authority is a free paper for the press. Nothing could be hidden. But also they decided that all their working material would be free for everybody to look upon. And they arranged press conferences every day and gave their view for the day to the press. I think this was a very good decision. Going back again and looking upon it, I think that was necessary. The situation would have been much, much worse if they had not taken that decision. Apparently they have made some mistakes. They didn't realize the cesium problem during the first week, that it would be a delayed problem for half a year or more. They underestimated the dose during the first 1, 2, or 3 weeks. And they told the public what they thought, and then they had to change it. And that give you, of course, that type of reaction, as you had in Malmö, and also a reaction amongst people negative to nuclear power. For instance, Sven Anér. I mean, he wants to put it in that way, that you can't trust such a person as Gunnar Bengtsson. That is what he, as an anti-nuclear movement man, wants to put for the public.
So it's not true then that Sven Anér told me, and it was for the public record so I could tell you, that Gunnar Bengtsson won't tell the truth because his salary comes from industry, that is through that...
That's completely wrong.
Yeah, but you've heard him say this, though.
Yes, I know. I heard him on the radio on Friday saying that.
Okay.
But it is completely wrong, because the whole institute in Gunnar Bengtsson, he gets all his salary from the state. But the nuclear power companies, they pay not to the institute, but to the state, a fee, which is so big that it shall cover all the costs for the institute, both the SSI, the Radiation Institute, and the other nuclear safety authority. So that's the fact, and that's I mean, we can't influence in any way the way the authorities are behaving, and we don't pay their salary. I mean, there is no decision within there can't be a decision within the industry. We will rise your salary, or it should go down. We don't want you. We want another. It's not.
It puzzled me too, and I just wasn't clear on it. And
it's not the case. But of course, it's right that the money is coming from the industry, but not directly but we pay it as a tax or a fee. And then the bureaucracy decide how to use that.
It always struck me as puzzling, sitting in the United States reading my papers, for a country that had decided to, by an act of parliament, to bind the referendum and to phase out nuclear power by the year 2010. I couldn't understand, and I wanted to ask you when I got here, the money for the Ringwald reactor that was appropriated before Chernobyl, quite a bit of money for a country that was committed to phasing out nuclear power. And sitting in the United States in California, reading my paper, I said to myself, aha, now here, this is before Chernobyl. Well, isn't this interesting? Even the Minister of Energy, Birgitte Dahl, says that the money necessarily, this reactor could operate for 10 years and it would be fine.
It's in Ringhouse 2 you're talking
right,
about.
Right, Ringhouse 2. And yet now they're taking all of these crowns and putting it into this reactor. Maybe this is a sign that somewhere in the Ministry of Energy or in centers of decision making, there's really a question about whether or not they will be phasing things out as quickly as possible, because why spend all that money when one could have just as easily said, let it go for 10 more years, and that'll be the first one. I wanted to, and since I've been here, I've heard many people say that, first of all, that money would not have been appropriated after Chernobyl, that it would have been impossible publicly to have done that, but that it was of great concern to anti-nuclear people, because it also represented a symbol that, so I wanted to ask you, first of all, was the money necessary? I know you probably think yes, I'd like to hear why, and two, what is the financial justification for it? Is it the long run, it must pay off, but I haven't heard the explanation of how it pays off, so I would like to hear that.
First of all, the decision is not to phase out as soon as possible.
Right.
It is to phase out 2010.
Yeah. But you're not going to just do all of them in 2010. Do you think that's what they plan to do? That is, or would it be
One thing is what they plan to do, and another thing is what they say, and the third thing is what will happen.
Okay.
But the law says that the only possibility for the state to decide, you have to put out that from power. That is, that they can use safety reasons. It's not safe enough. That's the only reason, according to the law, they can use before 2000. And from the economic point of view,